The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
First thing we are going to talk about is this mooted ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Huge celebrations yesterday when it was announced. It looked like it may be on the rocks a little bit earlier today, but this is the story that continues to develop. Belle True is with me. Belle is the Independent's chief international correspondent and is in Tel Aviv. Belle, you're very welcome to the show. What is the latest on what is happening at government level in Israel?
Well, we were expecting this morning for the Israeli cabinet to meet and essentially approve the deal, which would then have a 72-hour waiting period in case anyone wanted to basically challenge it at the Supreme Court level. But that meeting hasn't happened. It hasn't been signed off from the Israeli side. Benjamin Netanyahu has accused Hamas of backtracking on the deal, saying that they had reneged on part of the agreement and caused a last-minute crisis. So at the moment, there are furious talks happening. I understand international diplomats are also involved to try and smooth out what these issues might be. At a government press conference today, they wouldn't give any details about what it was that they accused Hamas of trying to change. Hamas have said that they've agreed to the deal as it stood yesterday. So we don't have clear understanding of what's going on. But certainly, you know, this is worrying the families of the hostages and also, of course, civilians in Gaza.
And listen, I know there's kind of speculation as to when a cabinet meeting might happen, that meeting that had been cancelled today. And if there's any kind of concrete confirmation, because there's conflicting reports, we'll bring it to you here on the show. But what's the speculation there, Bella, so as to why this is happening? I know that there seems to be kind of two schools of thought emerging. One is that, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu is genuinely trying to reverse out of this deal, or this is a bit of kind of optics and politicking for the sake of some of those hawks in cabinet.
It's so hard to say exactly what's going behind closed doors, because my experience of covering Israel and Netanyahu himself over the last few years has shown that what is said publicly may not be what's happening behind closed doors. There are concerns that Netanyahu is facing increasing pressure from the more extreme right members of his cabinet, like Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, two ministers who've come out against the deal, calling it bad and dangerous for Israel. They are hawkish. They want the war to continue. They see this and have in the past called it almost a surrender. So it could be that he's trying to pander to them or facing genuine pressure from them. It could be that Hamas is trying to change elements of the deal. It could be that this is just optics ahead of what will go through. But either way, it's incredibly worrying for the families of those hostages who are desperate to see their loved ones again, who have been campaigning tirelessly for over 460 days for this deal, and the civilians in Gaza who I've been speaking today, who said that they have been under heavy Israeli strikes today that's killed dozens of people. And they're worried that as the time goes on, those airstrikes will only get more furious before any ceasefire is, you know, signed and enforced.
Well, what's the mood music on the street then, Belle, amongst Israelis?
So amongst the families of the hostages, and I believe I'll go there and say that I think the sort of majority of Israel, they do want to see this deal go through. They want at least the first phase of the deal, which would see 33 hostages released in exchange for Palestinian prisoners. It's a three-phase deal. It's incredibly complicated. If you try and trawl through it, there's so many layers to this onion. But they do want that at least to happen. There is also, though, a school of thought here from the far right and some people who have family members who were killed on the 7th of October who think that the military operation should continue, who want to see, you know, Hamas obliterated, and so believe that this is effectively a surrender. But I'd say the vast majority, you know, think this war has gone on too long, that people need to come home, that the hostages' lives are in the balance every second that they stay in Gaza.
And Belle, amongst those who want the war to continue, what's the end game as they see it?
Well, they would talk about the complete and utter destruction of Hamas. And so they believe that can only be done militarily. I don't think they necessarily, you know, would think that much about the civilians in Gaza. But for them, they see it as a massive security threat. There needs to be, you know, the effective crushing of Hamas. And then probably, you know, a lot of the far right here believe there should be a continued kind of occupation of Gaza, as in a military occupation with boots on the ground. So that's a sort of far right attitude. But there is, of course, you know, people who here who just want this to end. And this has been a nightmare. There's a lot of displaced people in Israel. And there's a lot of people who want their family members to come home.
Listen, Belle, thank you so much for that update. Scott Lucas with us as well. Scott's a professor and a political analyst at the Clinton Institute in University College Dublin, UCD. Scott, what is your sense of where we're at in terms of this deal and how close it is or isn't to getting over the line?
In the last half hour, an Israeli official has told the well-placed journalist Barash Ravid that there will be a cabinet meeting tomorrow morning, where it's expected that they will finally confirm the deal. The leader of a right-wing religious party, which is part of the coalition, the Shas party, has said that they expect the deal will be completed. A U.S. official has also been telling journalists that they think that the final issues have been resolved. I think the broader issue here, you're starting to get into it, is that the idea that Hamas, you know, had changed or set new conditions, that was a cover story for what was happening. The two hard right ministers in the Netanyahu cabinet, and that's the national security minister, Itzhak Ben-Gvir, and the finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, they were threatening to leave the government. Not only were they threatening to leave the government, but Smotrich's party, the Religious Zionist Party, was threatening to withdraw entirely. And that would have given the government only a narrow majority in the parliament, in the Knesset. And that caused the wobble, because Netanyahu either had to choose to press ahead with the deal and risk the resignations of these ministers, or he had to back away from the deal and risk not only upsetting a lot of people internationally, but upsetting the families of the hostages. I think there's been a lot of lobbying, not only by Netanyahu, but by others, to say, look, stay the course. Don't let the hard right unravel this at the last minute, and it looks like it will go through tomorrow.
And once it goes through, Scott, to what extent are we close to a lasting peace? Or maybe a better question, how far are we still from a lasting peace, given the kind of the three-phase nature of this deal and the fact that I think there's been kind of 60 violations of the ceasefire deal in Lebanon already by IDF forces? So how far are we from peace, lasting peace?
That's a great question, which more people should be asking. And I think the answer is we're still quite a ways away from it. There is the issue about, first of all, in that first phase, that six-week phase, that both sides live up to their side of the bargain. So the 33 hostages are returned for more than 1,200 Palestinians, that the Israelis don't block humanitarian aid, that the Israelis pull back their military forces from most areas in Gaza. But here's the real problem, Kieran. The second phase, you have to get agreement on two issues that I think we're well far away from. The first is that the Israelis will have a full withdrawal, and that they'll take all their forces out of every area of Gaza. And we've already heard that the right-wing cabinet ministers are very much opposed to that. Indeed, the finance minister, Mr. Smotrich, is insisting that there should not be a second phase, that they should go back to war. The second issue, which could be even greater, is that both the U.S. and Israel, and indeed some European countries, have said Hamas cannot stay in power in Gaza. But of course, Hamas is insisting we are the government in Gaza. How do you square that very, very large gap, especially when you don't have a ready-made Palestinian alternative to take over the governance in the Strip? And you have to get all of that done within 6 weeks of the first phase, or risk everything falling apart and then not being a phase two.
Scott, you mentioned humanitarian aid there. I just think it's worth touching on this before we wrap things up, because Israel and representatives of the Israeli government have been at pains to point out whenever it's put to them that they block humanitarian aid, that they don't, you know, we allow humanitarian aid in to the civilians of Gaza. At the same time, one of the consequences of the ceasefire is that humanitarian aid will be allowed into the people of Gaza. Now, how can both of those things be true at the same time? That they allow it in, but that they're allowing it in on foot of a ceasefire?
First, you know, for the record, and that is during these past 15 months, you have the testimony of the UN. You have the testimony of the aid agencies themselves. You have the testimony of other NGOs. You have the testimony even of the United States that the Israelis have blocked humanitarian aid and have repeatedly blocked it. When the Americans have raised objections to this, and they did this last November, then the Israelis have made some efforts to let some more aid back through so that there doesn't become a breaking point. 333 humanitarian personnel have been killed by the Israeli attacks in 15 months. A large number of aid shipments have not been able to get through because of the Israelis. And as a result, 1.9 million people of the 2.2 million people in Gaza are displaced, and many of them are lacking food, water, basic housing. That is just simply the facts. And it will be essential that the Israelis do not play games with the humanitarian aid in phase one of a ceasefire, as they have done while conducting their war.
Scott Lucas is a professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute in University College Dublin. Scott, thanks a million for joining us. As we said there, as Scott said, news coming through in the last kind of 30 minutes or so, it appears that the Israeli cabinet meeting is going to happen tomorrow, and the mood music would suggest that the deal will be approved. Whether that means a temporary peace, if even, or a lasting peace, we don't know. We do not know, but we will continue to cover that story here on The Hard Shoulder.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.